helping you today with Super Granny. She's back in the chair. It's a real pleasure to welcome back Andaline Salverson, international speaker, author and parenting coach, mum of four and proud grandmother of 10. Andaline, you don't look old enough. She is our Super Granny and she's the founder of Munchkins. Hello and welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
It's good to see you. And of course, you also regularly visit the UAE, helping moms, dads, children, and already been put and set to task, I believe.
Absolutely. It's been a busy week.
And the sort of people you're helping and the sort of problems and issues you come up against.
Mm-hmm. It's all the same thing wherever I go, whether I'm in the States or in Switzerland or South Africa, where I come from. It's the same problem. Parents are desperate to have peace in the home and they don't know how to get there. So, you know, when they said it takes a village to raise a child, as we know in Dubai, the village is just a sandpit. And it's a friend next door and another friend who really have got their own problems. So you haven't got that support. So
well,
it is difficult.
It is, can be really difficult, mm-hmm. challenging if you haven't got mum and dad, as in grandparents close by. Or
sometimes it's a blessing.
Yeah, depending, of course. We're going to be taking a look at disciplining your child and what that means in today's age, and looking at some of the parenting trends. We've even been looking at apps now, where you can use an app to help with reward and helping your child hopefully sit at table and finish food and maybe calming them down after, during or after a tantrum. But questions already coming in this morning, already earlier on today, Andaline. So let's kick off with a question here. I'm a mum of three children, ages 13, 11 and 7. The 7 and 11 year old share a room and they go to bed at the same time, just before the 13 year old. But the 7 year old won't go to bed before the 11 year old. How would you manage this? This is from Jane.
It's really important, especially when you've got three children, to make sure that you've got alone time with each one. So I always start parents with saying that they're not going to listen to you at night if they don't listen in the day. So you would start with the daily routine first, but rules without relationship cause rebellion. So we need to build up that fun time, that relationship building opportunity before we set down any rules. And every house has their own house rules. And when a teacher walks into a classroom, she's got her rules. She goes, you know what, don't mess with me. This is my classroom. And she sets the rules. And because children know that there's rules and consequences to rules, they obey it and they respect it. So each parent has to have their house rules. So my suggestion would be bond with each child separately, but take especially those last 15 minutes before bedtime to say, 7-year-old, you and I, 50 minutes, you and I alone in the room. The 11-year-old's lying on mommy's bed, waiting for his opportunity. 7-year-old, we get 15 minutes, we lie and chat or read a chapter book, something that they can look forward to. The next night is the next chapter and it's adventure, you know. And after those 15 minutes, it's right. Now you go to mommy's bed, read with the 11-year-old, spend time with the 11-year-old chatting or reading, and then he slips back into the bed, into the same room as the 7-year-old.
I think it's really interesting, that idea of, you know, it's an operation. You're running this as, like, not to military position,
but a tight ship,
mm-hmm. exactly. And I think that, I mean, I'm not a parent, but I see it around me, where, and obviously there's going to be elements of activity and chaos even during the day. But when you're seeing more of that and not a lot of calm in the house, you mm-hmm. start to ask the question, why is that? Mm-hmm. And I mean, in all the years, with all your experience, what do you see happening in today's world? Do you see there's more chaos in the home, or are people better at calming things down?
There's a few reasons why there's more chaos in the home. First of all, it's like a vicious cycle. It's like a hamster wheel, because people are being encouraged not to discipline their children, but to be their friends. So it creates a chaotic environment of who's in charge. There isn't a captain of the ship. There isn't a leader. Everybody's just equal. And then kids start acting out because there's no boundaries. Then the parents don't want to be around them because they're acting out. Then they send them on more activities to keep them out of the house. Or the parents go to work and fill their schedule to not be around the kids. And I've had lots of people be honest with me and say, I'd rather just go work and just have an hour a day with my child, because they're out of control. So they're calling me in and saying, actually, I don't want to go to work. I actually do want to be with my kids, but I can't stand the way they are. So it's like a vicious cycle. Kids are overactive, booked up with activities, and there's no time to just be children instead of competing and taking part in this and taking part in that. And parents are rush. So that's one of the differences I've found.
Lara's saying it's challenging when good to have help in the house, but challenging as well when it comes to setting down those rules. So if you've got a nanny, if you've got help, if you're not around all the time, how do you keep that consistency, particularly with different cultures, different nationalities?
What's important when you've got a nanny is that I find that people get nannies for different reasons. I particularly prefer to have a nanny to do the housework to free you up to be with the kids. But again, with that vicious cycle, you'd rather do the housework and let the nanny deal with the kids. So we're back to square one again of who's in charge. The calmness and the relationship needs to be built between the parent and the child.
So getting that calm, a good time of day is sort of just before bedtime.
If like never, if you haven't had a time in the day, then at least you've had 15 minutes.
Yes, exactly. And if, you know, having that sort of bed tea and bath time period where you're winding down and maybe, you know, having that bath can with bubbles can help calm things down as well. And you're talking and chatting. So you being there at bath time can really help the situation as opposed to somebody else being there.
Another thing that helps is to have those times in the day which I call chill time. And when you've got more than one child, you know that they're opposites. They're so different. And each one needs to be connected in on a different level. One needs to have activity. Your extroverts, your introvert needs one-on-one quiet time and needs to have some alone time. So I believe in divide and conquer. Sometime in the afternoon, just have them all in separate rooms, go to each one separately for 15 minutes, play with them, connect with them on their level for 15 minutes while the other ones play alone. And they'll look forward to that time together.
What about technology? So, what do you advise when it comes to children? Maybe part of that quiet time is being on a tablet, you know, maybe playing a game.
I don't have a problem with technology in and of itself. What I have a problem with is when parents use technology because they can't control their children. I think technology should be used as a top-up, as a reward, as something that they can work towards, as a good consequence, a reward to use. So, and it then needs to be something educational and not just Tom and Jerry, but something that they will learn from. There's so many educational apps and National Geographic programs and Dinosaur Train and Magic School Bus, stuff that they can learn from instead of just mindlessly sitting and looking at a screen. That's where I would prefer to have an iPad that's an interactive program, not violent games, but an interactive thing where they're learning instead of just. But people use that as a babysitter. And that's where I'm saying if they've got no if they're not in charge, they can't decide it's now chill time. Go and spend individual time. So they just go, put the TV on and get them out from under my feet. So that's what I have a problem with technology.
And we hear a lot of it, don't we? You know, now, okay, just give them that in the mornings. I can sleep in. And if there's a problem, just give them the iPad and they'll be quiet when you're out eating, dining out, whatever. Have the iPad at the table. It
keeps the children. Why not card games? I mean, when you're eating out at a restaurant, what a fun thing to do is whip out the cards, play Uno or something instead of everybody on their own phones. And that's the other thing is parents are setting that example. They're on what? WhatsApp, they're on their Facebook pages when they should be sitting at the table talking to each other.
So the idea of reward and for good behavior, but then if there's not good behavior, what do you do? Now, we've heard about the timeout principle, and I was looking at this article, Thoughtful Parenting, Unnatural Consequences. So using timeout and denial of privileges to be discussed, you know, that's part one part of it. So there's also this idea of time in. So apparently this has come into favor. So it's used with children younger than 5 or 6 who can't articulate what's bothering them or how they feel. Doesn't staying with your child and being affectionate with him or her after the child has misbehaved akin to rewarding bad behavior, you might ask? Well, not really, as they go on to outline. So the idea behind this is instead of going, let's sit on the naughty chair, or let's take time out, or let's, when actually there might be a frustration for the child not to be able to articulate how they feel. The idea is actually a bit like you're saying about bedtime, you know, is for the parent to actually sit with them, maybe put their arm around them, lie down on the bed, go into a quiet place and give them time to talk about what's really going on. This might sound in an ideal world kind of scenario, but what do you think, Super Granny? Time out, time in?
I've got very strong views about that. And there's what I call taking a moment. My granddaughter that lives with me at the moment for a period of time is 5. And she will say to you that I had a talk at my house and I had 20 people there that I was giving a talk to. And she comes running down thinking that everybody's there for her, you know, center of attraction. I want all the people. Yay. So I said, do you know why these people are here? So she said, why? So I said, they want to know how to get their children to listen. And she looked all shocked and she said, they must just get, put them in timeout. But I don't have to go to timeout anymore because I listen. But sometimes I just need to take a moment. And then she went to each one individually to tell them exactly that. And then after the third one, I stopped her. I said, okay, enough now. And she said, but the others haven't heard yet. And she's this happy, happy, happy child. She's 5 years old. She doesn't even know what an angry face looks like. Never gets shouted at. And she doesn't need timeouts anymore because she really is a happy, obedient child. But sometimes she just needs to go and take a moment. So we've got a little tent for her with her plush toys, and she goes and has a little cuddle, and then she comes back. So that's different to me to what I consider time out. Time out is when you're out of control. So you've missed that opportunity of having a moment, and the child is spiraling out. Then they need to just have, I believe, some isolation on their own to work it out. But contrary to what those people, what that article believes, I don't believe in sitting there with them. I feel it's a time we all need, a place where we can just hit the pillow, scream and scratch something, but it's not your mother. And then when you're ready, we'll have a chat about it. But I don't think it helps the child by being next to them when that's happening.
And do you think you should always have that conversation a little while afterwards?
Oh, yes, you must always have a conversation. I think conversation is key because, again, rules without relationship cause rebellion. So just laying down the law is not going to get you anywhere. But having a good relationship helps your child to be able to feel safe to come to you with those emotions.
You are the founder of Munchkins, so tell us a little bit about Munchkins.
Munchkins' logo is transforming family dynamics by empowering parents. And that's my passion, is to empower parents to want to be with their children. Because, you know, Maslow said if you'd only have a hammer in your toolbox, you treat everything as a nail. So if you've only got one tool, you're only going to use that one tool. So I believe parents aren't bad parents because they don't know what to do. They just don't know what to do. They've got this one method that they've heard of and they're trying and it's not working. And I feel sorry for them. I just get goosebumps and tears in my eyes and I just want to get out there and help them and say, let me put some more tools in your toolbox, because that makes you a great parent. The fact that you're reaching out and saying, what I'm doing is not working. Instead of putting this Facebook face on, making as if everything's fine. And that's a big problem that I have, that parents will say to me, everybody else is coping and I'm not. And I say, but I know those people. I go into their homes and the moms and dads are not coping, but they've just got this Facebook face attitude on that everything is fine.
Well, people texting in wanting your help and advice, and we're going to be looking as well at some of the parenting trends, if you will, and what you can access via apps, and you know whether you think it's working or not. If you do have an app that you use with your child, we've got one here, Beep Bop app, allowing parents to reinforce good behaviour with beeps and issue boops to signal bad behaviour. What do you think of this, Andaline?
Do the boops and the bops give them shocks every time?
Reinforced. Yeah, so putting this reward system in place with a payout contingent, if you like.
Well, I believe there's a psychologist that worked out a reason why behavior gets modified. At different stages of your life, there's different things that motivate you to change your behavior. And the very lowest level for the youngest, most immature way of changing your behavior is through rewards and punishments. We obviously don't want to, as adults, be that motivated by rewards and punishment to change our behavior. But from a young age, they've got external factors and external voices that are helping them to make wise choices. And going through the ranks, the most mature way of making a decision is an internal voice, which you've established through all your experiences and going through all the different stages. So then we have an internal locus of control that helps us to make those decisions, not based on, oh, I'm going to get punished. Oh, my dad's going to be disappointed. Oh, my peers didn't like it. Oh, you know, my value system said this. You become your own person and decide what your value system is and who you are. But the very lowest level is rewards and punishments. So I don't have a problem with rewards and punishments. However, parents will misinterpret that and use bribery and threats instead of rewards and punishments. And briberies and threats do not work. So the difference between bribery and reward is a reward is after the fact. Bribery is before. So bribery would be, if you behave when we go to the shops, we'll get you an ice cream. Now they turn around and they use that on you. So if I do this, what am I going to get? Where reward is after the fact, it's working towards a goal. When they're over three, they understand time, so they can work towards a goal. And then apps like that and this incentive charts that I sell are really effective because they're working towards a predetermined goal, but that goal needs to be creating a memory, not sweets and toys.
That sounds
much, that makes it effective.
Yeah, very effective. Very interesting indeed.
And it's alone with mom and dad. It's not with the siblings. It's what mom and I are going to do together, like we're going to bake together. But we've got to work towards a goal to get there.
Someone here is texting in saying, my husband gets home from work and often says that I speak to my children in a bossy tone. But that's the only tone that they'll respond to. Any tips?
Yeah, stop being bossy and use other incentives. I don't believe that a child needs to hear a harsh voice or a shouty voice or a begging voice. If you think of a teacher that you respected at school, she didn't use a shouty voice. She used an assertive, strict voice. So strict means, it's misinterpreted, strict means I said it, I mean it, do it, or there's a consequence. So that doesn't have to be in a tone that's harsh. It just needs to mean that I said it and I mean it, and I'm consistently going to stick to it. So I encourage parents to think before they speak, so that when they do give an instruction, that it stays an instruction. But when they say, would you like to go bath? Well, then the child has got an option. So if you don't mean, would you like to bath? Then say, it's bath time. So no shouting is necessary. They only listen because you've created that pattern of they'll only listen when I shout. But you've got to change the dance and make sure that they listen because there's a consequence and not a shout.
You mentioned before, you touched on sort of the stages, and obviously that's a whole developmental show in itself, from birth to teen years. But what would you say are the sort of, or is there sort of a critical time for children as they're growing for parents to kind of, you know, embrace or harness these kind of good practices?
Sure. I believe your first 7 years is, of course, very, very important. And I always encourage parents to think about the different parenting styles. I've got five different parenting styles that I describe in my book. I've written two books, the one on health and discipline, and the other one is called A Brand New Child in Five Easy Steps. But in there, I explain that there's five different parenting styles which are based on your temperament and what's been modeled to you. So you automatically become your parent or the opposite of your parent because that's the model you've had. That's what you're drawing from. But I'm saying don't let that be your criteria, because your child needs different parenting styles at different times of his life. So he needs a sergeant type of parenting style when he's under six. He needs you to be strict and say, this is the boundary, and the child feels safe with that. But you can't do that in teenage years. So you've got to move from a sergeant, nurturer is the baby one, then a sergeant is under six. Then you have your teacher trainer, which is a bit wider boundaries, a bit more communicative, more of a counseling role, good listening type of role, with suffering consequences to your choices. And then you move into the teenage years, which is your parenting style, which is more like a coach. And the coach poses questions instead of barking orders. It poses questions and helps a child figure out their consequences by themselves and discusses options, choices that they're going to make. And then you move into a friendship. And that's when you leave home and you're friends with your parents. So you can't be your five-year-old's friend, and you can't be a sergeant to your teenager. You need to move through the ranks depending on your child's needs, not depending on what's normal or natural or comfortable for you as a parent.
A couple of people have texted in and they've used your services and saying how amazing you are and how you've turned their house around. One person here saying, you know, from chaos to calm. So what do you do, Andaline, when you go to somebody's house?
I mean, my cape and use my magic wand, of course.
I mean, what's going through your mind as you, I mean, I'm assuming you're asking lots of questions, but are you figuring out then what stage the parents are at,
yeah,
and what kind of personalities they are?
Yes. Absolutely. So I always say the most difficult part of my job is the first 20 minutes because I've got to sit there and smile and nod because I can see where we're heading already because the pattern is the same. But I do take parents' concerns into consideration, their temperaments, their children's temperaments, their setup. And then we address those issues according to what the parents are comfortable with and how desperate they are. And within that 3-hour home visit, there's literally a transformation. It's absolutely so rewarding because after 3 hours, we have peace in the home when I walk out that door. Whether it's one child or 4 children, it's absolutely phenomenal to see the peace that the parents have when I walk in the door. I always say they cry when I walk in out of frustration and they cry out of happiness when I walk out the door.
It's interesting there, you know, 2, 3, 4 children, and you imagine the more children, the more chaos potentially. But I don't know if that is the case. You might have chaos with just one. But one of our listeners is texting saying, we have a child, but we're thinking about having another child, but I'm not sure because things are going well. So, you know, the idea of like bringing more into your home and how that's going to affect the family dynamic, the existing dynamic.
It does. But having a sibling is character building. That's not a bad thing. I think it's a great thing, but people feel sorry for a child when a sibling is bored. And I'm like, no, say yes. They get a fast track into character building because when you're a single child, you don't have to wait. You don't have to build patience and long suffering and, you know, that all those lovely character traits that you want to develop in kids. And you get that at an early stage, like when you have twins, they've got to learn early to share. They just have to. So I think having a more than one child is a good thing.
If you think the child, they're going to get away with more though, the
single children.
The first child. If you're bringing, if you have siblings, you're going to get away with more in those sort of first year or so.
It depends on the parenting style. You know, sometimes parents overcompensate because it's only one child. Sometimes they're strict because it's the only child. Sometimes a single child will be in adults' company more often. But you get a single child syndrome, you get a middle child syndrome, you get a baby of the family syndrome, you get a only son bunks 3 girls syndrome.
Syndrome as well. Yeah.
There's a syndrome for everything. It doesn't mean it's bad or right or wrong. It's just you handle it differently. You're different towards your first child than what you are towards your second child. You're more relaxed with your third child. You get everything new with your first child. The third one gets hand-me-downs. You know, you have a different attitude towards the pregnancy, towards the birth, everything. And it's not bad.
Talking to parenting coach Andaline Salverson. She's also the author of Raising Happy, Healthy Children. And another book that she's written is A Brand New Child in 5 Easy Steps. Brings a wealth of experience to us here in the UAE. Regularly visits. She has our company Munchkins and she does home visits. She also runs courses as well from time to time. So helping you as parents lead an easier and happier, easier, healthier life, one hopes. But it can be a challenge and people are texting in. We're going to share your questions in a moment. But just this week, going viral online is a video by mommy blogger Sophie McCartney. She's based in the UK and she parodies the lyrics to Ed Sheeran's Shape of You. It's gone viral, receiving 20 million views on her Facebook page. I'll share a little bit of this. So there you go, getting a little sort of taste and flavour, if you like, of a daily life for a mom, it seems, detailing the life of a parent embroiled in tantrums, strange smells and feeding battles. Well, it seems whether you like it or not, whether it's tasteless or not, it's very popular. It's getting a lot of attention, Andaline. Have you seen it?
I've seen a part of it, but it is typical of life. But, you know, every stage of a child's growth should be celebrated. Because it's never going to be back again. You're not going to have that teething problem again. You're not going to have that spitting up, that crawling into your bed. That it passes, and it passes so quickly. When I think, you know, my oldest child is 42, and I just think, where did it go? It's just like a vapor. It's gone.
I think that's really interesting because I think of friends of mine a few years ago now who struggled a bit in the marriage with the children, and it always seemed to be that dad was never there at bed tea and bed bath time, you know, that bedtime, sort of a couple of hours from sort of 6 till 8 o'clock. He was never there. He was always at work or he was out. He made sure he came in after everything was sorted and the children were in bed. And he actually talked about being reluctant, you know, it was just hard work and let mom get on with it. And in fact, his brother turned around one day and said, you know what? Embrace it as a father, embrace it as a parent, take it on and enjoy it. It's like you said, it's not going to last forever. And once he started doing that and actually getting on his hands and knees and mucking in and rolling around on the floor and playing games and engaging with his toddlers, it started to make a difference in the relationship.
And a lot of dads have admitted that to me. They said they'll sit in the driveway and do their emails because they don't want to go in because of the chaos that's going on. So that breaks my heart. And I want to change that. My passion is to change that bedtime is not chaos. And I've helped families with 5 kids often to get that bedtime routine so smooth that everybody looks forward to it.
Well, lots of questions on this. Let's address them. One here saying, I have a very easygoing 18-year-old son and a challenging 15-year-old daughter. She has an answer for everything I say. How do I approach this constant battle that she has to have the last word?
Well, you always have opposites. Your first one, if your first one's an introvert, the second one's an extrovert, or the other way around. So clearly you've got your extrovert there that's second, that wants to speak and speak her mind and wants her way, blah, blah, blah. And the older one is the sensitive one. But what I often find with the sensitive ones is parents miss what's going on with the sensitive ones because they are under the table, a little bit sly. They're the teasers. They're the ones that say, I didn't do anything. And then the extroverts get into trouble because they react. They can't keep their mouth shut. Now, I've got 2 introverts and 2 extroverts. And my third child, who's an introvert, it's two sons and then 2 daughters. So Celeste will always listen to her dad lecture and lecture and lecture and lecture and lecture. But of course, the fourth one, who's an extrovert, who said she taught me everything I needed to know, she would just react to her dad and answer him back. And then one day she said to Celeste, how do you do that? How do you just keep quiet and not react when dad's giving you this lecture? And she goes, oh, easy. I just look at him and plan my wardrobe. So they do have different responses to your reaction. But my advice would be to, once again, build relationship with your 15-year-old. They need to respect you. And the only way you do that is by building relationship and staying calm. Because getting angry puts the focus on you. It sets the example of how to respond. And they don't respect you. So find something that she's interested in and learn about it and connect on that level and have times together where you can laugh together and set boundaries. I really believe in setting reasonable, respectable boundaries. Sit her down, discuss with her what the boundaries are going to be and have her come up with consequences to the boundaries. For instance, if she's going out and curfew is 11 o'clock, you could say to her, well, for tonight's evening that you're going out, what do you think would be a reasonable curfew for tonight? And she could possibly say, well, tonight we're just going for coffee. I think 10:30 would be fine. We don't need to be out at 11. Okay, fine. Then your curfew is 10:30. Obviously, you're not going to go for 2 o'clock. But you just have discussions like that and hold her to that and then discuss with her. So what would we do if you didn't come in at 10:30? What do you think would be a reasonable consequence? So in that way, again, like I said, with the parenting styles, she's in the coaching mode. But coaching means posing questions, but sticking to your boundaries.
A lot of people texting in for the younger age group as we started out this hour. So I'll share a couple of them because I think they lead down a similar road. My 5-year-old little girl complains when I play or carry my 7-month-old son. She says that I'm not kissing, hugging her or playing with her. That made me realize I need to give her more time. So I usually make time for her, you know, in sleeping time, bedtime, share stories and play with her more on the weekends. That's one message coming through. Somebody else actually asking about how to stop or at least allow their daughter to use their iPad less during meal times when they're eating food. And also hear about the youngest child when their older siblings are going to bed. So we're talking earlier about bedtime. So the older child is going to bed at the same time. So I told them, fine, but when you have a sleepover at your best friend's place, I'll ask his mum to make sure you all go to bed at the same time as his little sister, who's 2 years old. Are you okay with that? After reflection, he said that he could see my point and became much more reasonable in his request. I think explaining and reasoning and using examples really helps in these situations.
Absolutely. I think it's really important for parents to realize that pecking order is very important. That your oldest child, you always expect more from your oldest child. Always. But yet you don't always give them more privileges. And I believe that responsibilities come with privileges. You can't say to your child, well, you can get your driver's license at 18 because your brother got his driver's license at 18. It doesn't work that way. You don't get a promotion at work just because somebody else got a promotion. You're preparing your child for life. So I believe in starting at home with pecking order and giving the older ones choices and leadership. So what I'll do with the kids, I'll say, right, the oldest one is the leader of the week, and that older one just kind of rises up and gets like this proud moment, you know. And then I'll say, well, you can choose which day of the week your brother can be leader of the week. And they'll be like, okay, Mondays. All right, so Mondays the brother's the leader, and the leader gets to make choices. But what is a good leader? A good leader is somebody that has followers. John Maxwell said, if you think you're a leader and you look over your shoulder and nobody's following you, you're only going for a walk. So if you're not being a good leader, your sibling is not going to respect you and follow you. So what we're doing is we're creating leadership qualities and getting the older one to make decisions. And then on the other days, the second one is going to be making decisions that day. But if they've got attitude, they lose that privilege and the other one gets to be the leader for the rest of that day. So with your introverts being leaders, they are not natural born leaders. So here's an opportunity to learn at home how to take people into consideration, not just going for peace sake, oh, it's okay, we'll watch what you want to watch. And if the extrovert is the leader, we're teaching them to take people into consideration and not just step on people to get what they want, because otherwise they lose the privilege for that day. And one of the privileges is going to bed later and choosing the movie we're going to watch and choosing who sits where, who baths first, stuff like that, that they can have a little bit of power but have consequences that are bigger as well.
And being fair, I suppose, mm-hmm. for all of the siblings. But, you know, this is a lot of work, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not against or adverse to hard work. But is this something that just becomes second nature, or is it that parents are literally having to do their own homework almost when the children are in bed and thinking how the day went and how each individual of their children are and how they're going to then process that information and then put into place new or continue with certain practices the following day as a parent?
It's very hard work. Parenting is a continuous job. It is 24/7. It really is. But the more work you put into it, the more results you've got at the end of the day. It's like saying your job. You can't just sit here for the hours that you sit here. You, after hours, you're still thinking and planning, and you don't just cut off. I'm sure you don't. So, and the more you put into it, the more energy comes through when you're doing your job. So parenting is the same. In your silence, in your example, in your training, you are developing a person that one day you reap the benefits of. So the more effort you put into it, the better the results. And boy, the iPad is concerned at the table. How about saying no? You shouldn't be watching movies, TV on all the time, or iPads when you're eating, because your body's got to digest food. It's got to be involved in the process. Eating is a sociable time. Your children should have boundaries that no technology at the table, not mommy's cell phone, not daddy's cell phone, not iPads, not TV on. We chat at the table all together. And that's bonding.
Talking there about the stresses really of modern day parenting in the world that we live in and how we're managing everything, juggling, keeping all those balls in the air. And I suppose for you, Andaline, over the years, with all your experience, one of the things that's been, I suppose for everyone actually, whatever you do today, technology has changed the way we think and the way we communicate and the way we operate. And that's got to be impacting parenting.
It does. And we brought it up a few times today that what about the iPad, you know, and the technology at the table, and my child doesn't want to listen. But you could use technology to your advantage. You could use that as something that they've got to work towards. I've managed so much with over 8-year-olds with, fine, you do all your homework and you do your chores and you do blah, blah. Great. You earn 15 minutes. I don't like the way you talk to your brother. You just lose 10. That's great. We'll put on 15. You can work with technology. But with parents, what I'm finding is it's the blessing and the curse of the internet, where you can find exactly what you want to find on the internet to agree with what you're saying or to disagree with what you're saying. And then you've got your expert mother with one child that's got their one easy child, and she's got all the advice in the world that things are going to work. I believe in saying to parents, find two people that you really trust, that they've got the fruits of what they're saying, and then listen to people's advice. Then go to your two trusted researchers or friends that you really trust, and then go home and do what you want. Because there's so much input out there.
It's a really good advice, really good advice. Suzelle says, we stopped allowing electronics at the dinner table. We're now connecting as a family much more. We talk about good and not so good things that have happened during the day. Definitely no electronics at the table.
Mm-hmm. I call it MSG. What made you mad? What made you sad? What made you glad today?
And you know what? Children love that.
They do.
They love to, you know, ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. It's a great detractor as well. Sometimes if you've got focusing in on something that's negative in the moment, maybe falling out with brother or sister. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what about this? Yeah. How about that? And immediately your mind is taken and they're engaged and you can start
and
building.
And they're considering others, because you're saying, okay, it's your turn. Suzanne, what made you mad today? Okay, okay, then Suzanne gets a turn to say, okay, Johnny, what made you glad today? And he goes, I loved it when my teacher did blah, blah, blah. So you're getting insight into each person's life that day and then asking somebody else and being interested in somebody else.
Someone's asking here about teasing. You're talking about how to, you know, sort of manage, if we call it discipline. I mean, we can use that word. It is discipline, right? We're not to be afraid of that word. And because it's like the language is changing, isn't it, sometimes within parenting.
People freak out.
Yeah, yeah. So with teasing, how do you manage that if you've always got one of the siblings teasing the other?
Right. So teasing is your introvert's way of fighting. Your extrovert's way of fighting is attacking, with words or with physical. So your introvert's got to be taught that teasing is just as bad and as punishable as hitting, because it hurts somebody's soul instead of somebody's skin. So teasing, I believe, is not allowed. And you tease them replacement, you teach them replacement behavior. So this is the way you could rather say that. You don't say it in this way to anger your brother or your sister, because their response is always, but I didn't do anything. I just said blah, 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 even though they know. So if you hold each child responsible for their contribution, because I've got a big thing about fighting, and you hold each one responsible. So when something happens, the introvert, the tease, is usually the one that comes and tattles. And then your approach to that shouldn't be calling the other one, why did you hit your brother? Your response needs to be, so what did you do wrong? Because there's always a contribution. It doesn't matter who started the fight. The point is, what did you do? Oh, I didn't do anything. Okay, so I'm going to ask your brother. If he tells me what you did, you get two punishments. If you tell me, you only get one. And then that way, he starts going, well, actually, I was teasing him. Great, well done. Now we'll ask your brother what he did. So each one takes responsibility for what they did in their contribution to the fight.
We were looking here at HuffPost and parenting tips. And in here it says, be transparent when making parenting mistakes. And also, anxious parents do crazy things. So it made me wonder, really, as a parent, how much do you share with your children about how you're feeling, about maybe your vulnerability, or how much their behavior is upsetting you, me, as the parent?
No, nobody's responsible for your emotions. You can share with your kids, but they're not responsible for your emotions. So I don't believe you should ever say to your child, you made me angry, you made me sad. Well, you've got a choice to be angry or to be sad. It's not your child's responsibility to be responsible for your emotions. So you've got to say it in a different way. So you can say, I was really upset today, and unfortunately I shouted at you, and I shouldn't have shouted at you. Please forgive me. Will you forgive me? And that's modeling how they should do that to somebody else. But you can't tell a child that they're responsible for your emotions.
What about if mum and dad are having an argument? Is that okay in front of the children?
I get that question often. And what I've said to like an 8-year-old, I said to him, you're allowed to argue with your brother. And he goes, yes. So I said, okay, but hold on. There's three rules. You're not allowed to shout. You're not allowed to be mean. And you're not allowed to hurt. And he goes, what's left?
What's the fun in that?
And that's the same with parents. You're allowed to have a disagreement in front of your kids, but no raising your voice. And once you've had a disagreement, you can agree to disagree. Or you can go, you know what? I'm sorry. I was wrong. And it's good for your kids to see that modeled. So I don't believe in fighting in front of your kids. Take it outside. Take it in the other room. But it models a healthy way of disagreeing with somebody. It's okay to disagree with somebody, but you do it in the right way.
And externally, what's happening in the world or in, you know, the wider community, if something happens and it's could be worrying or, you know, concerning, how much do you expose your children? Because what you're talking about there sounds like, you know, preparing them for real life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you can be protective, but if you're overprotective, how are they going to survive? How are they going to be resilient when they get older? It's hard balance, isn't it? You don't want them to be aware of all the awful things that could happen in the world. And yet we want to prepare them to be strong.
Right. So you're preparing them, for instance, looking after the earth and green and recycling. And so you're preparing them for that, but you're not a doomsday preacher that's going, you guys are going to die because you're destroying this planet. And so you don't go over the top. And of course, it's age related as well. It's important for them to be aware that there are people that are hungry, but you're not going to say eat all your food because there's a hungry people in Ethiopia or wherever, so you must eat your food. They don't care about that. They don't think outside of themselves. So we're preparing them all the time for the world. So it's good to share worldviews in front of them. So you're speaking to your spouse and they're hearing stuff like that, but you're not putting a weight on their shoulders.
And if they, you know, if they hear something at school or see something on the internet, it's you want them to be able to come to you and talk about it, but you need to manage it carefully.
Absolutely. According to their personalities and their age.
Well, the conversations will continue when it comes to parenting effectively. But, you know, you're really helping people here in the UAE and further afield. As always, a pleasure talking to Andaline Salverson, parenting coach. Check out online munchkins.me. That's her company. And also we've posted up on our blog post today, dubaii1038.com/Dubai Today, for more details on what Andaline offers. She also has her books, Raising Happy, Healthy Children and A Brand New Child in 5 Easy Steps. So for now, Andaline, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.